and I began this show, this collaboration, yep, with the Fast and the Furious Part 8, or F8, or Fate, as some people like to call it. Was this like 4 years ago?
Yeah, it's crazy. I was thinking about this last night, how what started this whole series was the Fate of the Furious.
And that's what it was. It was the fate of the Furious. That's what it was. Okay. Yeah. And it's strange because I have not been enamored with these movies, very much in any capacity. And we'll get to, my history with them. But F8, I thought was a lot of fun. And I really kind of dug it, even though I think it was at that point that people were like, this is not very good. They're outrunning submarines. This is kind of, trashy and stupid. And I was like, well, the last several movies in this series have been, in my opinion, trashy and stupid and frankly boring. So what's the difference? And I could never quite figure that out. But I had a lot of fun watching that movie with you and talking about it afterwards. And that led to a lot of a beautiful friendship and a lot of other beautiful collaborations. And 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, that's true. Without Fate of the Furious, I would have never seen 2001: A Space Odyssey.
That is fate. Now, today we are not talking about Fast 9, a movie that I don't know if I'll actually watch, because that, at least not in the theater. I'll wait the 3 months until it drops on streaming or something. But I had never seen the Fast and the Furious from 2001, the first one. And I've never seen the third one. I've since corrected that problem. This is a late screening, Cole. So have you never seen the original Fast and the Furious?
I've not. The only movie of this franchise I've ever seen before this was Fate of the Furious with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, this is a late screening for both of us then. This is going to be a lot of fun. And the other caveat is I didn't used to be a note-taking guy, but I think it was a function of getting older and watching way more movies and talking about them. I became a note-taking guy. With the exception of the Fast and the Furious, I just sat down on the couch and watched this with my wife and my mom, who was visiting in town, and just took it in as a movie. And it was really weird not to be pausing during any lull to scribble some illegible thing into a notebook to remember later. So we'll see how much of this I remember.
This is funny that you mentioned it, because there's a sketch, like a little bit that Jimmy Fallon did years ago. I think it was when Fate was coming out, where he had one of his writers watch all of the Fast and the Furious movies at like 5x speed and had to like try to identify what the movies were about. It was pretty funny. I'll see if I can find the clip and send it to you. But watching the movies so far out of their timely context kind of felt like that. I just felt really out of place. But it was an interesting watch, especially considering I have now seen the bookends of this series, at least until F9 comes out.
Yeah. And, it's not going to end, because they've already teased that they're going to film parts 10 and 11 back to back. And because this is all Universal, now they're talking about a possible crossover with Jurassic World. I don't know what that's all about.
I am speechless, which is very rare.
I mean, I would go to the theater to watch Jurassic Fate, Fast
Jurassic Cark, I guess. Or what I've been calling Fast and the Furious in my head is Reservoir Dogs, because it's just like Reservoir Dogs with cars.
Or another movie that you may not have seen, Point Break with Keanu Reeves. Okay, now this is going to be fun, because one of the big... You can call it a complaint, but other people make this as a sort of a fond reference. Point Break came about 10 years before The Fast and the Furious in 1991. It's a huge kind of a cult hit. And it's exactly, The Fast and the Furious is an exact clone of that movie, except instead of heisting cars, it's Patrick Swayze leading a gang of bank robbers whose gimmick is they wear rubber masks that look like the ex-presidents. That's why they call themselves the ex-presidents. But beat for beat, pretty much, it's the same film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We should have done a double feature for that now to think of it, but I don't know if I could put myself through that. No.
Yeah, that's a lot of this story to watch, I'll tell you that much.
So let's just get into, and we don't have to worry about spoilers because it's 20 years old. And, if you've seen The Fast and the Furious by now, if you've seen any of the sequels, you've kind of seen this movie already, but also kind of not. What did you think of the original Fast and the Furious? And also in comparison to F8, did you, like me, wonder how the hell did we get from there to there?
That is exactly how I felt. It was so funny turning this movie on because as a person who grew up in many ways in the 2000s, I think of that as like quote unquote modern times. But like now I have to remind myself that the 2000s ended 11 years ago and gave way to the 2010s. So it's just like, you know, what felt modern back then is just very dated now. And it's interesting to watch a movie from that era, still with clearly some 90s influence and kind of bleeding into the 2000s era. But what I immediately thought was, this movie is smaller in scope than I had expected. And then I felt stupid for thinking that because of course it's the first movie in a franchise. So then my thinking shifted and it was essentially like, okay, the idea behind a movie like this at that time was probably let's mimic like the Harry Potters and the Twilights of the world or like the Lord of the Rings's, make a first movie that is good enough and then get all sorts of budget for the future movies as we go forward. Because if you look at the plot of Fast and the Furious versus the plot of Fate, it is two completely different worlds. Because I went into this movie thinking I liked how 8 was like secret agent-y and like it was basically just action thriller spy movie about family. And I was like, yeah, I am in for that. What I didn't realize is that the franchise leading up to F8 clearly builds that whole genre kind of in and of itself, you know, from the footsteps of the first. So it was super unique and interesting to see these characters the first time, I guess, and not see them be international super spies.
Yeah, it is really just about, you know, busting these, you know, Paul Walker, RIP, is an undercover FBI agent who's trying to bust these street racers because they're knocking over these semi-truck shipments full of, this is the big flashback for me, something that I thought a lot about in 2000, 2001, but which over the years, because technology has changed, I forgot had even existed. And that is the, I think they were Sanyo TV VCR combos that were in some of these trucks that are being boosted. And I saw them like, oh my God, it's like seeing a baby picture from, you know, after 40 years.
And they probably cost what at the time, like, you know, $600 for one of those things.
Oh yeah. Those were a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the movie, I mean, overall was fun, but it was just like, I like where this series has gone as kind of a mindless action thriller, like, you know, pretty predictable series, at least from what I know of Fast 8. I have never, I mean, you know me, I have literally never minded walking into a theater, knowing that I'm going to shut my brain off for 2.5 hours to watch some cool car shit happen. You know, there is no situation in which I'm more prepared to suspend my disbelief other than maybe a fantasy book, than seeing an action movie. And that's what I like about the two movies I've seen of this series is they're kind of just willing to like set everything else aside and just make some cool shit. And I'm like, that's totally fine. Where I think this one struggles is it clearly wants to be that blockbuster action flick, but the budget's pretty low. The acting is not that great. And I think they vastly overestimated the interest of this particular audience member in street racing.
Well, yeah, but you were like 7 years old when this came out, Cole.
I was 10. Thank you very much. Sure. but it, I mean, I get that. And I think we talked about this in Fate, but like I have never been interested in cars even remotely. I can look at a cool like old retro car that somebody has restored and appreciate the work that they put into it. But there's no part of me that wants to have that. Like the only cars that I've ever thought were cool were fully electric cars that use no gas because the environment, right? So I watch these shows and I'm like, I have to find something to latch onto. And when I say shows, I mean movies, of course.
Yeah.
I'm doing great. Thanks. Pat on the back. It's just like you have to have something to latch onto. And when you look at the 8th movie, you can kind of latch onto this whole idea of like they're a family now. They've been through all this shit together. And I know it's ham-fisted, but I'm kind of in on it because it's fun and stupid. Whereas this one, you kind of have to wait for that to build. Yeah. And the reason that Paul Walker becomes entrenched in these, in this quote unquote family is because he's investigating them, gets too close, realizes that they're the people he's hunting, and then is like friends with them at the end. And that is a lot of disbelief suspension that is hard for me to reconcile. But like when movie two comes along, sure, you know, I'll do it again, whatever.
Well, movie two was, I mean, it's strange because, again, I skipped the first one. I was going to skip the second one, except I think it was Roger Ebert's review of it. I don't remember what he gave it, but he was selling it to me in terms of how awful it was, mostly because Paul Walker returns. Vin Diesel does not. He doesn't show up until a cameo in the end of the third film, which is technically not even really part of this universe.
It's Tokyo Drift, right?
Right. They were trying to do like the spinoff thing, but it didn't really work.
They've tried that a few times, apparently.
Yes. And the one they did with Hobbs and Shaw with Jason Statham and The Rock, that movie is amazing.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. But no, well, it's,
yeah, Jason Statham was one of my favorite parts of Fate.
Yeah, well, he pops up earlier in the franchise. I would recommend catching up on these movies. They're not all that great, but yeah, maybe watch them on 2x speed. But
there we go.
No, but the thing Ebert was talking about was it's Paul Walker returning as Brian O'Connor, I think his name is. I think he's been disgraced or he's like gone rogue or something like that. And he teams up with Tyrese Gibson, who's this kind of, you know, street smart, you know, big mouth guy. And then they team up to foil some kind of a criminal bad guy. But they're constantly like getting each other's faces, taking the we're cops, we're, you know, rivals, but we have to work together thing to the nth degree, to the point where they're so close that you're just waiting for them to kiss. And I read that and I was like, it was almost a challenge he was laying down. So I went to the theater. I'm like, he's absolutely right. There are so many scenes where they're about to like go full tongue makeout, but they just never do. And that elevates the movie. Plus there's a scene where a guy, I think, has a rat staple, like put into a trash can, then taped to his body as torture. So that's fun. And then I skipped part three, and then part four was interesting because I think three didn't do very well. So they're like, all right, we can squeeze a little bit of blood left out of this franchise. So we're going to announce it as the end of an era, but it did so well. They're like, well, shit, now we got to make another one. And then you've got The Rock coming in, and that it keeps getting these new engines put into this shell of a car and it kind of being revitalized. So yeah, it's fun. And what is interesting about this first Fast and the Furious is the elements that would get played up and eventually associated with the franchise, some of them are in here and some of them are barely in here, not really at all. Like the sexuality of a lot of the kind of the street race groupies, mm-hmm. You see a little bit of that, but it's pretty tasteful. I mean, Rob Cohen, the director, he'll show like a couple of girls in tank tops or something like that. And like, oh, they're hot. As you get further along, it's almost like the Michael Bay level of we're going to take this camera and put it all the way up this girl's thong as far as PG-13 will take us. And yeah, it's very much exploitive. Plus you've got, I like the idea of the low level street crime and the fact that the people who became the heroes of this series started off as kind of the villains, but they're not exactly villains because they're stealing millions of dollars of stuff from people all over the place, but they're also, you know, kind of lovable doofuses.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you find yourself rooting for them. And it's one of those scenarios where I just like, I look at the street racing world and know nothing about it. So you kind of just have to give yourself to the filmmakers and just be like, tell me who to root for. And you just go with it. And it's like, even though I think Paul Walker, you know, this is not his best performance.
I'm sorry, Cole. This might be his best performance. all respect to Paul Walker. I know he's got legions of fans and everything, but he was not a very good actor.
Yeah, I get that for sure. And I'm happy that he has fans, and I'm sorry that he passed away. It's just like you kind of want a pretty boy to be the lead of one of these franchises, and he just fits the bill, I guess. But all the other characters are more interesting to me, even though many of them kind of fall into these archetypes because it's a heist movie, I guess, too. you know, I love Vin Diesel. I think, you know, it's hard to beat Groot or the Iron Giant in particular, but he does pretty well here. And it's just like you're kind of scared of Dominic Toretto from the get-go when you meet him. And there's not much else that a character like that really calls for, I think. The depth just isn't ready to be explored in this movie. So I like what he does.
I'm glad you could latch onto that, because I couldn't, because I just know him from all these other movies where he's sort of the hero figure, you know. Mm-hmm. He's the Ethan Hunt of this franchise, you know, Mission mm-hmm. Impossible reference. This is like the blue collar Mission Impossible, although with all the kind of pseudo parallel government agent assistants, there's nothing blue collar about these folks anymore.
Right.
But I mean, I think they're going to go to space next. But with Vin Diesel in this movie as Dominic Toretto, first of all, it was jarring to see him so skinny. I mean,
yeah, it's 20 years ago. I keep having to remind myself.
Right. I mean, he's muscular and everything, but he's got that lean kind of, you know, boyish, you know, he's probably in his mid 20s or something at this point. It's just weird because now you see him, he's like, I was going to say roided up. I don't think he's on steroids, but he's definitely, you know, beefier, and he's been right. a lot more of these action movies where he's called on to do that. But yeah, I was not intimidated by his character. I know I was supposed to be, and maybe I would have been 20 years ago, but now it's just like trying to believe that Christian Bale's Batman was the Joker in the first movie.
Right. It's, it's not easy to believe most of these characters. And I think in some cases, some of the characters are harmful stereotypes, particularly with, Tran and a lot of the, I don't even know what their gang is called. Or what the family of the Asian folks is, because there's like three factions, quote unquote, I guess you could really latch onto here. And the whole time Brian O'Connor thinks that it's Tran and Wynn is his last name. I can't remember the guy's first name, but this kind of war between these two factions takes place, and it's very easy for Brian to believe it's not the ones that he's hanging out with, you know?
I did not pick up on that. This is the second time you've described this element of the plot, and I'm not doubting you. It's just that, and maybe this is again because what I have heard about the movie in the last 20 years, I thought that that Brian was on to Toretto's gang from the get-go, and that the you know Chinese gang or whatever, those street racers were just kind of getting in the way, and it was almost like he could his agency wanted to bust them while he was on this other job, but it was kind of messy because everything was intertwined and the agency was going to fuck things up.
So maybe the movie failed me in that case, because I'm not entirely sure. That the read that I got was that he got close to these folks, thought it's probably not them, and tried to cast as much blame as possible on the rival gang, especially because he saw them shoot his car and blow it up, right? So it could have also just been that he was mad.
Yeah, I mean, that'll cast some suspicion, yeah.
For me, the whole undercover cop kind of motif of this movie is the weakest element. And it feels like they had to shoehorn Paul Walker's character into this world in a way that just felt disingenuous. And I would almost like want a movie just about the inner dynamics of street racing, and you know, like how they avoid the cops and how they get these things together. The logistics are intriguing to me, and it's like, if they're betting this much money, like can they buy up some land and build a quarter mile racetrack and do it there, you know? And this is all stuff that privilege would probably allow them to do, and that the movie would fail if they could just easily do that. But that's where I wanted the conflict to come from, you know, more like how does this all work, and why are these factions against each other? Is it simply because they want to be the best racers? Like I like that whole dynamic, and I think it's interesting. And to me, Paul Walker's character could have very well been, you know, an up and comer who is trying to get in on the scene and doesn't really know where he fits in. What do I need to do to prove myself, right? And he kind of has that through line, but it's all under the guise of I'm an undercover cop investigating this. And that's what didn't really resonate with me. And it's fine. Like I'm totally fine to cast that worry aside and just watch the movie for what it is. I just thought the story could have been more intriguing if they approached it from a different angle.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are other movies out there like that. Ones that I'll admit to not having seen, but I've heard not very good. One is called Torque, which I think is sort of a cult movie, but that's more about like motorcycle riding and you know that kind of thing. But I agree, the FBI stuff is pretty weak, but and this is completely meta to the movie, I was hooked because I don't know if you recognized the mustachioed superior guy that was working with Paul Walker's character, kind of the disheveled, you know, dude in the tan jacket or whatever looked like. He looked like a stereotypical 1970s cop. Did you recognize him?
I did not.
Actor Ted Levine, who we talked about earlier this year, playing James Gum in The Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I would never have got. Maybe it's a shared universe there. Jurassic Park, Silence of the Lambs, Fast and the Furious. Silence of the Fast Dinosaurs coming to theaters this June.
So he's just going to like wander through a portal and mosey up to a velociraptor and say, would you fuck me? I'd fuck me. I'd fuck me hard.
Hannibal Lecter shows up. Hello, T-Rex. Can you run faster than a car? Because I can. I think the one of my favorite parts about this show that we do is some of the weird crossover ideas we riff and come up with, because holy crap, they're probably cinematic gold and nobody's digging them up.
Yeah, I mean, people bury all sorts of things out in the desert of ideas. But no, I think that's one that we should definitely write down. Now, I got to say, Johnny Tran is the leader of the Asian gang, played by Rick Yoon, who I think I recognized him only from having seen the trailer for this movie. But, you know, as much as his character is, you know, kind of like, I hate to say stereotype in a negative way, because it's more of an archetype, you know, 80s and 90s movies. This was a thing. It was, you know, usually a white American cop investigating, you know, Chinatown or, you know, underground triads. I mean, Michael Douglas did Black Rain and Mickey Rourke was in something else. I'm totally blanking on it, but it's just a thing. And I like the fact that if they're going to go there, they're not going completely stereotypical. I mean, it's more of a bunch of Asian kids growing up in America, and they've got these elements of their culture that they're kind of holding on to. But yeah. I just want to say, Rick Yoon in this movie, I don't know if man crush is the right word, but like when he takes off his helmet, he is a beautiful looking man in 2001.
He is indeed. It's just what I do like about this whole plot line is the movie is focused on Dominic Toretto's gang, right? So, and I do like that this quote unquote rival gang is like, they're treated as equals. Like they all clearly do shitty stuff to each other all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they're targeting this specific faction, but this movie focuses on that dynamic as kind of like the red herring, if you will. You can barely even call it that because you kind of know it's Dom's group the entire time. But I like that. That's something that I just missed. I just liked all the different factions here. And I liked this world, and it feels like, I haven't seen all the other ones, but this whole FBI storyline to me felt like they have to have an in to get all these people to be working for the FBI as car sleuths, I guess. And that's fine, because what I like about this franchise of the limited movies I've seen is that it is a subgenre of action, which is essentially car action, right? Whereas James Bond is like the spy secret agent action movie. And I like that there are these different subgenres. And I like that I can go into this movie knowing it's going to be an action movie with a bunch of cool car and helicopter and vehicle stunts. And it's not just going to be like James Bond playing poker. And I say this, even though Casino Royale is one of my favorite movies of all time, it's better than Skyfall. Nobody can tell me otherwise. Anybody who thinks that is just wrong, I'm sorry. I'm not even sorry. I don't know why I said I was sorry. Just pisses me off. But anyway, I like that these have kind of carved out their own niche. I like that they have the budget to make them like wacky and crazy. And that makes me happy knowing that it grew from this movie, which was I'm going to say dull in some ways, just knowing where it is now. This one felt a little dull, but like still some of the stunts were cool and fun. But seeing kind of what came of this is what made me enjoy the movie all the more. Oh, and I have one funny thing to say.
Yes.
I play this game called Rocket League, which is essentially car soccer, and your car can fly. It's really fun. Aaron and I play it all the time. And you have like titles under your name, and you can just get new titles by playing and earning experience. And I've had one called Granny Shifter for probably 3 months now, and I had no idea what it meant. And they said granny shifting in this movie. So apparently it's a car thing that I had no idea. Has to do with transmission or something like that. Wow. So I guess I'm a bona fide granny shifter now.
I wouldn't say that too often, though.
I think you said it, and this is going to be the title of the episode, right?
No, because it's going to turn out that's some kind of like horribly offensive slang, right? Somewhere and be like, what?
I would assume that it has to do with manual transmission versus automatic or something along those lines. I have no idea, but it was just funny, like seeing that term in a different car context and then seeing it played out here, because I had no idea what it meant. I just thought that the combination of words was funny.
I gotta say, and again, there's two of these movies I haven't seen, one that's not yet released and the other is the third one, which barely counts from what I understand, but this one is kind of my favorite out of all of them because of its simplicity. I feel like as they go along and the movies get more and more ambitious and ridiculous, that's fine. And people are kind of into that. And I think when they are out running the submarine at the end of 8, it's like, okay, this is just a pure comedy now. But I like the simplicity of it. But I also like the audacity in the first like real street race where Brian is racing against Dominic. And I think the stakes are the car or something like that, plus some money. Mm-hmm. And they both have nitrous.
And respect.
Oh, and respect, yes. You know, you can't buy respect, but of course you can win it in a street race. but
everybody knows that, Ian. Gosh. Right.
Well, you know, that explains, I'm also not into cars, which explains why I have no respect. You know, all praise Rodney Dangerfield. But I think that they have these nitrous boosters, which, again, knowing nothing about cars and knowing Nas only as the energy drink, which I don't know if this movie inspired it or if it's the other way around or what, but that's all I could think of, is like they've got all this energy drink that's superpowering their cars, and I think it's actually the same color. But when Brian turns on the Nas, because he's got like dual canisters or something, I watched this last week, so my memory's a little bit hazy and I didn't take notes, but the camera and the car, everything gets super sped up. I'm imagining some of this was green screen and some other kind of effects, but he has almost this Tron meets 2001 Stargate sequence in the car where I'm like, he's actually going warp speed, but he's only probably going like, you know, more than 100 miles an hour. The effects are so crazy and ridiculous. I'm like, I am totally on board with this movie. And this is campier, it's more ridiculous, but it's also more fun than anything I saw really in the other movies, because I would rather see something weird like this rather than I'm gonna blow your mind, we're gonna drive six cars out of an aircraft or what do you call those, not an aircraft carrier, a bomber, like a B-52 mm-hmm. bomber that's, you know, 30,000 feet above the air, we're gonna have cars drive out the back and they're gonna parachute. I'm like, yeah, I can picture that. I couldn't quite imagine what was in store for me during this particular race scene. And I'm also glad that they opened the movie with this giant effects set piece and they didn't come back and try and up it at the end. At mm-hmm. the end, it's like this practical climax where these cars are racing the semi and there are people hanging on. There's this guy with the shotgun. And honestly, there is a scene, there is a moment where the truck driver is fighting back against these hijackers and he's blowing holes in the window and the doors to try and get these people off their cars. The moment I said, how many bullets does he have? How many rounds does he have in this shotgun? Is he taking time to reload? The second I finished that thought, there was an insert of the front seat and the guy's like shucking the shells and putting them into the gun. It was like, they thought of everything.
Yeah. The detail is great. And I love the scene you mentioned because you know, where he's driving, he's kind of in flow. And I think that, you know, there are movies that have tried to deal with the idea of flow, of just being in the zone. Soul is like a good recent example. Mm. And it's like, everybody has experienced that at some point in their lives, no matter what they're doing. Like for me, it's when I'm playing a video game and I just like know what I need to do. It's like, that is all that exists to me in that moment. And to bring that to life visually was super cool and impressive, not only because of the time it was done, but also because it brought me into that world a little bit. And it's like, okay, they're probably driving for 15 seconds a maximum for a quarter mile, but like it feels like an hour because there's a million things they're doing at warp speed, right? So like they're home, this is their zone when they're driving. And then, like you said, when they're in the heist, like none of that happens. And it kind of is a nice juxtaposition because they are completely out of their element. This isn't a normal race and they have to react in a way that isn't that isn't conducive to just driving straight for a half mile, right? Like right. they have to be in the moment in a much different way that includes being aware of everything around them. So they can't possibly be in that same state of flow. And that's when it goes wrong. So I think that the cinematography of the movie in that regard is pretty impressive. Yeah. It tells a really cool story and it really does a good job of kind of holding your hand and saying, this is what it feels like when you're a good racer and you know what you're doing and you're going down that stretch. And then this is what happens when you go from that to robbing a semi truck where the driver has a shotgun.
It's a cautionary tale is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's like, if you feel like you're in flow in this scenario, do not go do this thing right afterwards. It's just fun. It was an interesting way to bring somebody who's not familiar with what that rush would feel like, you know, into that world. I've driven fast in a car before, but never that fast and never with stakes that high. I would never bet $10,000 on myself to win any race of any kind in any medium or vehicle. But I certainly wanted him to win in that one. And it also feels like the stakes are pretty low because every time somebody risks their car and they lose, they either run away, end up not giving them the winner the car, or the car gets blown up by somebody else. And it's like, well, you won the car. Why'd you just blow it up? Like, just go take it. These are questions I shouldn't be asking, but here I am.
No, it's fine. A question that I was asking was, you know, during the, I guess the semi-truck thing was the pre-climax, and then the race through the street to catch up with Johnny Tran and his friend or brother, whoever they were, after they mowed down the one kid on Dominic's front lawn. I wondered, what time of day is this? Is it 4:45 in the morning? Because I can see sunlight, but there's no one else on the street and they're driving straight for like 2 miles. You see cars parked, but there's never like a lot of probably even some of the sequels to this movie. The stunt action is more involved because they'll be not racing, but there'll be a car chase, but there'll be traffic. And so they have to swerve in and out of things. You've seen car chase action movies. This was just this was just very bizarre because it was like they were trying to recreate the experience of a street race in the daytime, but it doesn't work because they don't have the hundreds of, you know, lookouts to, you know, cordon off the street.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just another example of like me not understanding how any of this works and kind of wanting to be fed that information and then constantly reminding myself that's not what this movie is about. Yeah. And it's like, but it's easy to do that with these movies. It feels like these thoughts are all passing and there are more things that happened after I finished. And I was like, you know, I kind of felt bamboozled in like a very positive way. Like, hey, like that's not what I expected. And then I was like, but whatever. It was fucking fun. So it all just kind of works itself out with these movies because you just can't expect too much.
Well, you can expect the unexpected because after it was over, my wife, I can't remember why she asked this, but Michelle Rodriguez's character, Letty, who is Dom's love interest in this movie, my wife said, so what happened to her? Is she in the rest of these movies? And I said, oh, yeah, she's in. I think she dies and then she comes back. And when she comes back, she's evil. And then she switches back to being good. It's a total soap opera.
And then they have a baby, don't they?
That's Brian and his girlfriend, played by Jordana Brewster, Mia. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't,
because then Jason Statham has to kill a bunch of people on a plane with the baby in tow, from what I remember in 8.
Was that their baby or was that Dominic? I don't remember.
It was somebody's baby because there was a baby on the plane. So not only was there a plane fight with a baby in tow, there was also a super secret hacker supervillain who took control of everybody's car on Earth. So that's where this series goes. And I'm like, sure, Charlize Theron can hijack my car any day, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is if you could travel back in time and just show people, like show Rob Cohen or Vin Diesel or Paul Walker the poster for the Fast and the Furious 9 and be like, there's going to be 9 of these things in the next 20 years. Cause it felt as much as they kind of leave it open for a sequel. This does not feel like a movie that warrants a sequel or that thinks it's going to have a part two. It's kind of like Point Break. Well, Point Break ends with the Dominic Toretto character dying. At least we think he does. Whereas in this movie, he's very injured and, you know, Brian lets him get away. But there's nothing in here that inherently smacks of, but wait, there was this big unresolved thing, or there's this kingpin who is above it all that now we have to go after him next. No, this, I think because this was a smash hit, they're like, we have to do another one. And I imagine the creatives were like, what do you mean other one?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like the foundation of a franchise, right? It feels like they were told to make a movie about this and then they did, right? Like Iron Man feels like the start of something. You kind of get that sense, and it's easy to say that in retrospect, you know, knowing all of the other movies that came out, but it's still like at the time they clearly hinted at it and made it very like obvious. But in this, it doesn't feel like that. And that's why I said earlier, it kind of feels like a launch pad into like, now that we've made this movie and it's done well, we can get six times the budget and make it even cooler. But how do we make that work within the context of this world and these characters? Oh, they've got to work for the FBI, which has money, which, you know, now they can chase down submarines in ice. Oh, that happened in Fast 8 too. Submarines, planes, robot cars, babies, we've got it all.
That should have been the poster. Forget the celebrity names. Just have that as.
I'm available for hire. Fast 8 or Fast 9 creative team.
Well, I guess it'd be Fast 10 at this point because Fast 9 is coming out this week as we when this is released. So you can't watch it today, Cole. This is coming out the week of release. You know, the more that we're talking about this, the more I think, not necessarily you, but just thinking about these movies kind of turned me around. I might have to just go see Fast 9 in the theater.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for it. I mean, I remember our conversation about Fast 8 better than a lot of our other ones just by virtue of it being our first.
You always remember your first, Cole.
Yeah, exactly. and I just remember, like, at the time we were both kind of like, we liked this and we don't know why. Like we had to kind of sleuth our own reasoning for figuring out why we liked it. And I think that's kind of the idea and mindset I want to take into these movies is like, if it's fun, just go with the ride, like it, cause it's going to be fun. And if you poke holes in everything, that makes you a movie critic. And that is not what I am.
They're the worst.
Well, that's the thing is, it's like, does this movie warrant holes being poked into it? Like, mercilessly. In some cases, movies do, you know, and it's because people say they're of a certain caliber and they may not be, but like nobody's trying to say that Fast 8 is, or even the first one, is the best movie of all time. But is it a fun, good action movie? Hell yeah. Like you can have a fun time watching this and it doesn't warrant a complete and utter takedown, even though there are plenty of issues. Whereas like if a movie is attempting to be some magnum opus of what it means philosophically to be a street racer, and that this was that movie, and they said that was the attempt, then I'd be like, huh? Like, get out of here. But as it stands, like, sure, I'm in, screw it.
Well, it was just a puzzling thing for me between, I think, 5 and 7. Because I think I liked 4, and then 5 through 7 were just like, eh, and then 8 kind of turned me around. But those middle movies, there were serious like critical think pieces about how the Fast and the Furious is good. And I might've even read the word important in there somehow, you know, aside from like the representation issue, which I agree. It's the other kind of jarring thing is watching this movie from 20 years ago. I'm not saying it's just the environment that we're in now. The cast is so like white compared to the diversity that they have in, you know, this movie. And also it's so small because now there's like 30 people in Dominic Toretto's gang.
Right. Yeah. We've got The Rock now, which honestly I love. I will watch anything that The Rock does, including The Tooth Fairy, which I have not seen, but I will watch it. I probably won't.
You're going to need some Novocaine for that, I'm sure. But no, I mean, and that's not like a criticism, like, oh, there's so many white people in this movie. It's just a marker of where entertainment has come in the last, you know, 20 years. And when you watch something that's older like that, that's made, you know, aimed at a quote unquote wide audience, it's different than the kind of movie that is made today that's targeted at a wide audience. It's more of like, we want to show more of the people on screen that are the types of people who are actually showing up in the seats.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much I can add to that. You know, it's, I like seeing progress in that regard, and I'm always happy to see representation from literally any group. I think it's important and crucial, as I've said multiple times, you know, in previous episodes, particularly about Harry Potter, God damn it. but,
which is a tease, yeah, that's coming up.
It is. Yeah. Next month. I've marked it on my reading list. I'm trying to think of a pun really fast, but I can't. I was like, there's gotta be a spell that rhymes with curious, but there isn't. You know what? We'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fast. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Goblet of Fast. You gasp at my puns and then you come through with that.
I'm sorry. Now I'm just thinking of Goblet Fast, which sounds like something I might hear in a porno movie. But anyhow, I think that's about it for the original Fast and Furious. Yeah.
Cat just fell off the back of the desk.
But you do it in slow motion, falling out of a car.
Yeah, right. He's drawing his gun as he falls out of the plane with a baby in tow. That's just there's not much I can say. You know, you're going to go in and you're either going to like or hate Fast and the Furious, and you're still going to be my friend either way. You know, mysterious moviegoer who is listening to this
or watching. You know, we are on the YouTubes, but exactly. So yeah, Cole, I might have to pest you at some point for a matinee of Fast 9. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm in.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
Also, love your Loki recaps as always.
Oh, I just
caught up on the latest episode yesterday, so I haven't watched your YouTube recap, but I'm especially curious to see what your comic book friends have to say about the big reveal, because I was quite perplexed, and I'm excited to see what lore has inspired this.
Well, thank you for the plug. But I got to say, not that you'll be disappointed, but it's one of those, and it's kind of one of those awesome things where this might be something original that's not necessarily drawn from the comics. So like everybody's kind of like, who could this be? So yeah, that's fun. But I'm glad you're watching. So, all right. Well, with that, I take my leave of you, sir. Thank you for another late screening. And we're coming back next month with Harry Potter
and the Goblet of Fast,
which is part 4, right? Fourth book in the series.
It is the fourth book. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Wow. Time. It's the fourth year tradition. We're going to be celebrating Mr. Potter's birthday. So join us back for that. Not you, Cole. I know you'll actually be here.
I will be
part of the show. Yes. But all right, man. Thank you. Take care. And you're part of my family now.
And family comes first.
Only in certain movies. Anyway, I'll catch you later, man.
All right. Later.